Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Always happy to be with you on these Saturday afternoons. Co-host Joe in with you all today. I guess we are not having Jane Silk this week, but she's indicated she wants to be hosting soon, so you might, the show might re-earn its title, Silk or Joe Show. Pretty soon. Anyway, the Silk or Joe Show is a Main Street Radio Network production, so we want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for allowing this program to exist, and we do thank them deeply because, well, sometimes their clients and even their management doesn't really care for the content on the show, but the management supports our First Amendment rights, even if it means some clients get a little upset, so we appreciate that. We also want to thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing this show, Silk or Joe Show, in its 10th year now. Soon to be 11th year. I'm not sure on the exact date. I should probably look it up, but it's coming up in the next month where we transition to the 11th year, which means that it's the 10th anniversary. So, great job for this program. Keep on trucking. I've only been with it for 2.5 years maybe, so it's not that big of a victory for me, but 25% of the time, right? I've been around, so yeah. That's a good number. Anyway, if you want to check us out, though, you can go to mainstreetradionetwork.com. You can also find our podcasts up there on the website. Just got to click around a bit. You'll find them, as well as podcasts for The Al and Nathan Show, which is another show the Main Street Radio Network does. Sometimes I guest host. So, heck, if you go to our social media page at Getter, GETTR.com, at Silk or Joe Show, and track down whenever I guest host for The Al and Nathan Show, or go to Main Street Radio Network's Wimkin page, W-I-M-K-I-N. And as I say those letters, I realize I may not have updated it as properly as I should have this week, but well. But you'll find out maybe when I guest host. Depends on if I remember to update it. And you can also find us on Twitter at Main Street Radio. And again, if I guest host for the Al Nathan Show, that'll be up there, as well as on Twitter at Al Nathan, which is the Twitter page for the Al Nathan Show, which has its own website, alannathan.com. So again, that's MainStreetRadioNetwork.com, AlanNathan.com, Twitter at AlanNathan, at Main Street Radio, Facebook at Main Street Radio Network, Getter, GETTR.com, at Silk or Joe Show, and Wimkin, W-I-M-K-I-N, at Main Street Radio Network. All right, that's a lot of social media stuff to get out of the way there. But speaking of social media, there was a nice little rumor that spread earlier this week, partly propelled by social media. You might have heard of it, the idea that Israel blew up a hospital during a counterattack against Hamas. Well, for starters, hypothetically, if that rumor had been true, the most likely cause would have been that Hamas had a bunch of rocket sites in a hospital. They have done it before. And actually, they like to surround it with patients and civilians when they do that sort of thing. Put their rocket sites in the hospitals. That way, you know, when Israel actually counters attacks and tries to stop rockets from being launched at them at random, all willy-nilly like Hamas loves to do, then Hamas gets to say, oh, look, they're killing civilians. They can't punch us back. That's not fair. Even though that's all Hamas is doing is killing civilians. Human shields are really a great propaganda coup for Hamas and all of them. So, I gotta say, it's a really disturbing sort of situation there that we've been dealing with for decades now, where Palestine just, they get to really do what they want, it seems, and get a propaganda victory. But this hospital thing, though, the truth has been coming out this week about it. And luckily, fortunately for us, that sort of thing can happen now. And the news but the news services actually seem to be disappointed and reluctant in reporting the truth. I hate to say that, but that seems to be a truth of the statement. So the truth, though, is that there was no hospital attack. Actually, the truth by Israel, anyway. The truth is that it was a Palestinian rocket that fell out of the sky on its way into Israel that hit the hospital parking lot. I don't know if no one died. There might have been someone in the parking lot. We don't know that detail. However, that was my cell phone going off because I forgot to mute it. Anyway, so what ended up, what was started out as Israelis killing 500 civilians, it wrapped up as a rocket detonated in a parking lot that was fired by Hamas. That really won't help, though, Israel's reputation there abroad because, well, they all started rioting the moment they heard Israel destroyed a hospital because that's what they wanted to believe. There were all sorts of protests outside of U.S. embassies, outside of Israeli embassies. And, of course, we've had people, Israeli embassy officials attacked. So I don't think that the actual truth of the matter getting out, I don't think anyone's going to actually believe that that sort of thing happened. So we're really in a postmodernist, post-truth era sort of situation here. Speaking of postmodernist, post-truth eras, Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, we've talked about her before, Democrat, the first Palestinian-American congresswoman. Even after this truth about this was known, the truth about the hospital attack was known, she ginned up hatred and rage in a crowd outside the Capitol, then stormed the Capitol, tried to overthrow democracy, interrupted the legislative process, you know, everything they accused the Trump supporters of doing January 6th, even had a bunch of protesters arrested. No one bludgeoned to death, though. No one shot to death, nothing like that or that intense. It was just simply a matter of the protesters coming in and the police treating them with kid gloves, almost. You know, they allowed them in, allowed them to do their thing, allowed them to disrupt the legislative process, and then gently shooed them out and arrested, like 100 or something. That's what the local news station around D.C. said happened, ABC 7. So there won't be any of them, though, held in prison in perpetuity. There's still a January 6th protester who's been held for over 1,000 days without a trial. That's not going to happen to these guys. If at the most they were held overnight and they're back out on the street, and if there is a trial, it's just going to be like a misdemeanor or something. Because in this country, if you protest in favor of a terrorist organization based on their propaganda and try to overthrow democracy, as Democrats put it, well, you know, that's okay. That's no problem. Atrocities, genocide, doesn't matter that you're supporting that. Just go ahead and protest or whatever. You know, storm the Senate. We don't care. However, if you're protesting a stolen election, well, that's a totally different thing, isn't it? That means you get prison time in a gulag. The D.C. gulag, as it's been affectionately nicknamed for the way they torture inmates there and try to deprive them of the ability to contact anyone, including their lawyers, which has happened out there. Look at the priorities of our government, though. You can storm the Capitol, breach security, enter the Senate while it's active, and no problem at all if you're in favor of a genocidal regime and you're trying to spread their lies. But if you're concerned that the election has been stolen and you do the same thing, well, first of all, they're going to start a riot outside for you if you aren't going to start one yourself. And then they're going to blame you for it, even though it's the government that started the whole darn thing. And then they're going to try to arrest everybody who's involved, even people who are not even in the building. They've arrested people on January 6th who are outside the building, didn't actually go in, arrested someone who was actually telling people not to go into the building. He's going to face years in prison for telling people not to go into the Capitol just for standing around outside. And then, of course, there's the leader of the Proud Boys who is facing 22 years in prison even though he wasn't there. Again, the priorities of our government here. They don't care if you're protesting in favor of a genocidal regime and you interrupt the legislative process, but interrupting the legislative process becomes a crime if you're concerned about election integrity. What does that tell you? You catch the most flack when you're over the target. And I guess another matter is that perhaps the Biden administration is not entirely against Hamas. After all, they gave Iran $6 billion, right? And then Iran gave that money to Hamas, and the Biden administration knows that Iran does that sort of thing. The Secretary of State admitted that they knew that Iran does that sort of thing. Now, the Secretary of State did try to say that $6 billion was always accessible by Iran. Trouble is, it wasn't. The Secretary of State also said Iran had no access to that money. So he, on the one hand, he admits that they had no access to the money. They couldn't actually get to it until the Biden administration acted. Then he tries to pass it off as though they always had access to that money. Well, no, they didn't. And then he also thirdly tries to claim that they can only use that money for humanitarian purposes, as if that's a defense. But even he also admits that, no, they could actually just, they can only use that money for humanitarian aid, sure, but that means they can siphon off $6 billion from their humanitarian aid budget and give it to the terrorists. And he says they do that often. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken did. So basically he admitted, yes, we just kind of funded Iran and their terrorism program, including Hamas. So this attack was courtesy of Joe Biden. And not to mention that Hamas has weapons from Afghanistan that Joe Biden left behind in Afghanistan. So the Biden administration really has been helping Hamas a little bit. And now there's government officials talking about how there needs to be restraint on the part of Israel. Actually, a part of the Biden administration, one of his lower offices, they sent out a tweet saying basically Israel didn't have a right to defend itself. So I guess, is it any wonder that the Biden regime and the Biden DOJ would allow a pro-Hamas protest to breach the Capitol, overthrow democracy, interrupt the legislative process, all things that they say Trump supporters were guilty of on January 6th for doing the exact same things? I'm not surprised. More Silk Radio Show after this break.
Introducing Nina's Familia, a brand new bilingual children's series from Cocomelon, the new spin-off series starring JJ's lovable, sporty classmate and friend, Nina Reyes. Through the same style of three-minute songs and nursery rhymes that made Cocomelon a worldwide phenomenon, children will now experience stories of family, social, emotional learning, positivity, and healthy habits through the lens of a bilingual, multi-generational Mexican-American family, including some episodes fully in Spanish. Emmy-winning host and TV personality Liliana Vazquez.
It's so important for kids to see themselves represented on screen, and Nina's Familia does just that. Through Spanish nursery rhymes and culturally significant storylines, Nina's Familia is celebrating Latin culture and heritage and giving it a platform to be shared and enjoyed with the world.
Children and their families can tune into Nina's Familia on the Cocomelon YouTube channel now, with new episodes arriving weekly.
Some of the costliest mistakes that people make is that they don't review their coverage every year. The Medicare open enrollment period ends on December 7th, and what people don't realize is that Medicare plans change every year, just as your health needs change. When it comes to maximizing your benefits and saving money, me and my team use the 3 P's method, which I write about in my short book on Medicare. It's not that complicated. What are the 3 P's? The first is your providers. Who are the doctors that you see? The second P is your prescriptions. What medications do you take? Are they brand name or are they generic? What pharmacy do you like to go to? Is mail order okay? The final P is your priorities. What's important to you? For more information, you can visit the government's website, medicare.gov, or you can visit our website, askchapter.org. You can also call us toll-free at 888-487-2023. Me and my team would love to help you, and there's no charge to work with us.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover guitar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Adopt US Kids for multiple choice parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give a little talking to man, mano a mano.
Hey, Steve. Is now a good time?
No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back for the Silker Joe Show, everybody. So while the government shutdown fight raged on this week, another matter came to light just about how... Well, why did I say government shutdown fight? The House Speaker race. Well, that was raging on this week. It brought to light that to avoid a government shutdown in case chaos like this happens again, we should probably, you know, do something to keep the government permanently funded or at least keep it from shutting down in case one party gets like this. You know, it's one matter, I guess, if one party disagrees with another and they can't figure out a budget. It's another when Congress is paralyzed for a totally different reason. Joining us now to talk about this, we have Kurt Couchman. He is Senior Fellow in Fiscal Policy at Americans for Prosperity. He previously served with the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Kurt, always happy to talk with you. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you doing, Joe? It's great to be back with you.
Right. Always glad to talk with you. So let's see, there's the Prevent Government Shutdowns Act in Congress. What exactly would that do for the situation?
Well, that legislation, the Prevent Government Shutdowns Act, would strengthen Congress and it would reduce waste. It would force members of Congress to keep working in D.C. until they finish all of the appropriations bill. And it would keep all the programs going in the meantime so that Congress's dysfunction doesn't become the American people's immediate problem.
Mm-hmm. And well, it seems like in some cases, the whole point of a shutdown or congressional dysfunction is to become the American people's problem, to put pressure on whoever your political opponent is. And it's just a matter of hoping that you can be the one on the right side of the issue in the public's mind and hope that you have the best PR team out there making sure of that.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I worked for two House Freedom Caucus members. We tried this in 2013. We were trying to defund Obamacare. It should be defunded. It's a terrible law. But the reality is that it's still funded. In 2015, we tried to defund Planned Parenthood. It's funded. And the reality is that the people that have the leverage in these shutdown fights invariably becomes the people that are writing the bills, the appropriations bills, or the omnibus bill. So that's senior appropriators and some members of leadership. And that's partly why we're dealing with the speaker situation right now, because leadership is getting blamed by some of the more conservative members for letting this happen when it's pretty clear that these are the incentives that shutdown politics creates. So end shutdown politics, you get a more deliberative legislature, everybody gets to be more involved with the process, and you get to reduce some of the bloat that would otherwise be in the omnibus appropriations bills to keep members of Congress from not voting for those when they come up right before Christmas.
Well, I've got to ask, what are the chances such a thing could actually be passed? 10 years ago, I would think it'd be pretty good. That was like one of the first times in a while that we'd had a shutdown fight to begin with. And so it's not exactly a common phenomenon, but now it seems like there'd just be another tool in the toolbox. So how do you get Congress, when it was more novel, they didn't want to get rid of it. But now that it's a common tool, I think there'd be even less traction on that getting rid of it.
Well, it's interesting. As we're talking to members of Congress, we're finding that they're really starting to panic about what happens on November 17th when the funding runs out. Right now, we have a speaker pro tem in the House, which it's unclear how much power Mr. McHenry is currently able to exercise, but he's not willing to do much right now. But there is some emerging broad bipartisan support for the Prevent Government Shutdowns Act. That legislation has, I think it's 4 Democrats and 14 Republicans, and then in the House it's 3-3. But there's a lot of other members that have supported similar legislation during the 2018-2019 shutdown. This was something that was talked about. And the other thing is, this is something that several states are already doing in a comprehensive way. Wisconsin has been doing it for a long time. So has Rhode Island. And they get their appropriations or their budget done pretty close to on time, certainly much better than Congress. And then North Carolina just adopted it in 2016. They were going through some changing political dynamics. And it's been a really successful tool to keep the budget from going off the rails and to advance good policy in their budgets.
I guess that's an advertisement right there for getting this established in Congress. And it also avoids that risk that I mentioned a moment before, that your gambit doesn't pay off and you end up on the wrong side of the issue in the public's eye. There's no shutdown fight, then there's no risk of that happening. And also getting your job done always looks good to the public.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of services that taxpayers pay for and expect and should be provided. I mean, national security and border security are two of the top ones. But this is something that would actually save a little bit of money from the state experience we've seen. But there's a lot more that needs to be done as well to really fix the budget at the federal level.
All right. So, sorry, that was on that phone call. That was actually the boss calling me for some reason during the show.
Oh, I thought that was the signal I needed to wrap it up.
Nope. You still got 3.5 minutes left. Yeah, okay. Nobody expects the boss to call in the middle of a program. They know you're on the air, right? Anyway, so
right.
As the shutdown issue moves forward, though, do you see this legislation being taken up anytime soon? Or are they just going to be so focused on getting the shutdown averted, they're going to overlook prevention in the future? And then once they pass that speed bump of the shutdown, there's no more urgency. So they'll just, you know, keep this won't have a priority. Is that a possibility?
That's what's happened in the past, but things seem to be changing. Democrats think that Republicans are unreliable now, and Republicans think the same thing about Democrats. And so there is more of a recognition that this is a structural thing that needs to change. And one thing that we've also found is really compelling to members of Congress is that Congress never intended this to be possible. For 191 years, from the first Congress until 1980, when you got to the end of a fiscal year, if there was a funding lapse, then programs continued. No new programs would happen because there weren't new appropriations, but things that were already going would continue. And then Jimmy Carter's administration was like, actually, this old law says that we can't spend money unless Congress has approved it, so we're going to have shutdowns now. And so Congress was like, what? But they haven't been able to get it together to do this until maybe now, especially, I mean, it could be that the turmoil in the House right now ends up being the thing that helps us get this fix in place. And then we can move on to other fixes, but it really would be important to do, and there seems to be more appetite for this than any time that I've seen.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of an adequate comparison, because I know something's happened to me recently where, you know, you have a long-term pattern of behavior, and then you want to change it, but it just never really gets to the crisis point where you need to. And then suddenly you hit that scenario where, oh boy, because of this behavior, I now can't handle this other thing the way I want to. And so that seems to be what's going on with the Congress right now as far as the shutdown fight goes. They got into that pattern of behavior and they thought, oh, well, anytime we've been able to handle it, we can handle it, we can do this, no problem. We'll just ignore it and keep it going. But then now they have mm-hmm. the speaker thing distracting from handling the shutdown, and they're realizing, oh, this is a pattern we got to get out of.
Yeah. And to be blunt, like, we see the shutdown politics and the repeated fights over, well, we have a shutdown or a CR appropriations as a distraction from actually fixing the underlying fiscal problems and other problems that this country faces. To use kind of an analogy about what you're talking about right now, it's like if, you know, you and your spouse are putting together your family budget, and then you can't quite agree on something, then it's like you just turn off all the lights, don't buy any grocery, don't buy any more gas for your car. You just stop doing, like, the normal things that you expect to do in your household until you, like, figure out how to do the budget for the next year. Like, that'd be crazy. No one does that.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I just realized that the thing I was thinking of was addictions. But anyway, Kirk Couchman, Senior Fellow in Fiscal Policy at Americans for Prosperity. Appreciate being on the Silker Joe Show to give a much more pleasant analogy than I had in mind. More show after this break.
Just in time for Halloween, MTV introduces the original film, Binge to Death, a parody thriller which premieres Tuesday, October 17th. Binge to Death stars Lonnie Love, Carl Anthony Payne II, Quincy Brown, Lauren Lott, Jessica Lord, Andre Anthony, Dan Ganane, and Nico Tortorella. After learning their favorite reality show couples have broken up, an obsessive single woman and her BFF decide to kidnap the contestants and force them into a series of torturous games, all with the hopes of rekindling their favorite TV romances. Binge to Death, executive producer Will Packer.
Okay, don't tell anybody. But I've been known to get a little bit obsessed with some of my favorite TV personalities, their going-ons, and especially their relationships. And I know I'm not the only one. Whether you're a fan of reality TV or not, Binge to Death will have you jumping and laughing a lot.
Binge to Death premieres Tuesday, October 17th at 9 p.m., 8 Central, only on MTV.
School is back in session. Unwind with the kids at the end of the day with the Nintendo Switch family of systems and games everyone can enjoy. Choose the game system that fits your family, like Nintendo Switch and the Nintendo Switch OLED model, both great for playing on TV and on the go, or Nintendo Switch Lite for handheld mode. Navigate through the dangers of Hyrule in The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom game, or check out the Mario Kart 8 Deluxe Booster Course Pass DLC and race your way through 48 additional courses from the Mario Kart series. Work together to command small plant-like creatures and explore a mysterious planet in the Pikmin 4 game. Or dive into Minecraft. Discover two modes that allow you to build fantastical creations and experience epic adventures. For more, go to Nintendo.com. Full version of game required to use DLC for that game. Additional accessories may be required for multiplayer mode. Game, systems, DLC, and some accessories sold separately.
Rated E to E10+.
A message from MyCataracts.com. September is Healthy Aging Month, and a recent survey led by Alcon, the global leader in eye care, found that cataract surgery gives millions of people the chance to turn back the clock on their vision. Dr. Netta Shammy says the results are compelling.
There are several exciting findings stemming from the Alcon Ion Cataract Survey. Post-cataract surgery, 90% of respondents report better vision, 71% report they have an improvement in quality of life, and about half feel they have the vision of someone younger.
Dr. Shammy performs more than 1,000 cataract surgeries every year and says many people do not know how cataract surgery works or that it can correct your vision.
Cataract surgery is the most frequently performed surgery on earth. The procedure is not painful and involves implanting a permanent lens implant into the eye. Before surgery, a person can choose from several lens options to fit their unique needs.
For treatment options and more information, go to MyCataracts.com.
I was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when it happened. There was a sudden jolt and our submarine crashed on the seafloor. We were in total darkness.
That's Dr. Dejana Figueroa, a marine biologist and STEM teacher, talking about a deep sea dive she'll never forget.
It's funny, when I was a kid, I was afraid of the ocean, and there I was, 2 miles below the surface. But as a scientist, you prepare for that. Using our training and a little creativity, we fixed the sub and finished our experiments. The dive was just too important. Every dive gives us glimpses at things few people ever get to see. Glowing creatures, fiery undersea volcanoes. When we got back to the surface, I kissed the ground and called my mom, of course. But you know what? I wouldn't trade that dive for anything.
Dr. Figueroa uses her passion for STEM to discover new things and make the world a better place. She can STEM, so can you. Check out She Can STEM for more stories and inspiration. A message from the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. So, boy, I've got a... So we have a politician who told inflammatory lies to protesters to turn hundreds of them into an angry mob, who proceeded to storm the Capitol and obstruct the legislative process and threaten democracy. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? But no one was killed, some arrests were made, and I'll bet there will be no jail time for anyone. Why? Because isn't this what January 6th? Isn't that what I described, exactly how Democrats described January 6th? Well, yes, that is their official narrative. Trouble is, that's also what liberals did on October 18th. So maybe we should have an October 18th committee looking at how Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib told a bunch of protesters to be mad and angry by lying to them about Israel bombing a hospital. She would have known by then it was a lie if she bothered to care to keep up with news. But I bet she just seized on the anti-Israeli talking point, didn't do any more research, didn't wait for an update on it, and just went out there with her plan. And who knows, maybe a staffer told her that it was a lie and she just went ahead with it anyway. That's something for the October 18th committee to figure out. Why don't we stack it too with a bunch of mad anti-Tlaib Republicans and see how that goes, right? See how much of a witch hunt that's declared. So, but anyway, she ginned up hatred in this crowd by lying to them. A bunch of pro-Hamas protesters stormed the Capitol, disrupted the Senate, disrupted the legislative process, some were arrested. The feds didn't start a riot, though. No one was shot or bludgeoned to death like on January 6th. No protesters, that is. Because it was only protesters on January 6th who were shot or bludgeoned to death. No one will be spending the next 1,000 days in prison without a trial, and no one will have every charge the government can invent slapped onto them. It is doubtful there will be charges in this case, in fact, because apparently disrupting the legislative process and illegally protesting are okay when you support massacres and genocide, but you disappear in a gulag for the rest of your life if you are protesting a stolen election. So take note of our government's priorities here. You can overthrow the government in support of terrorism and be heroes to the government and politicians and media, but if you protest a stolen election, off with your heads. So, as well, it's just this story about the Hamas hospital being blown up. I don't think, will there be retractions for it? You know, I've seen reporters at least hesitant to talk about it, but will there actually be any retractions for it, or will there just be, you know, will the retractions anyway get the same front page coverage as the main event, as the original initial reporting? It's a strong question. In fact, MSNBC's Lawrence O'Donnell, he outright said, you know, it didn't matter who fired the rocket at the hospital, it's still Israel's fault for daring to retaliate to Hamas's atrocities. Well, now we learn that, you know, the hospital wasn't hit, 500 didn't die, maybe a few parking lot vehicles got hit, maybe someone in the parking lot, that's about it. You know, this lie about the missile, it triggered Muslims to riot outside many embassies, and guaranteed no one will believe the truth because it's not what they want to hear. Facts don't matter to ideologues. There will be no apology, though, now that the truth is known. I predict that much. MSNBC will issue no retractions. It's the network that employs Al Sharpton, for crying out loud. He's best known for chasing Jewish-owned Freddy's Fashion out of Harlem in 1995 because he didn't want whites in the neighborhood. One of his lieutenants made it clear they wanted the Jews out of Harlem. All of his protesters threatened to burn the place down. One of his protesters actually did burn the place down after chasing black customers out at gunpoint so that they didn't get burned to death. And 7 Hispanics died when the guy did set the place on fire. And now their ringleader is on MSNBC. And, oh yeah, Al Sharpton, he did declare support for Israel during this latest round of attacks, but there's a slight problem with that. One of his lieutenants spoke at a pro-Hamas rally after the massacres had started. So, it's really hard to tell where this guy stands, but, again, he chased the Jewish store out of Harlem in 1995, so you gotta wonder how much has changed in the last 30 years. People do change, I guess, but, you know, especially ideologues like him, who are in it for the money. They start out on the street, and then eventually, once they get their power, they sort of pass themselves off as a moderate because that's how you keep your power. But you never really know after that where they actually stand, because were they lying then just to get into power, or were they lying now just to keep it, right? You have no idea. Now, as far as the remarks I've made about perhaps the intel community being in on this, this whole Hamas attack and withholding intelligence from Israel, you know, would I put it past the intel community to just let the Hamas atrocities happen if it meant aid and weapons for Israel? Well, you know, of course not. Like good little fascists, they and the Democrat Party are beholden to the military-industrial complex. It sure seems like they knew what was going to happen before it happened, given what I mentioned last week, the warnings about Russian propaganda from the deep state just days before the war broke out, and given the timing too, hot on the heels of a government shutdown overfunding the military-industrial complex. We suddenly get this new war with real atrocities and a real solid no-gray-area villain made to order for the defense industry. So of course it's possible that they would, that the intel community would let this happen, but you know, we also have to wonder how much did Israel know? Was their intelligence service taken over by the same wokesters that convinced hundreds in their military to mutiny in the weeks leading up to Hamas's atrocities? Because that's another thing that happened too. In the lead up to all of this, there was the Prime Minister of Israel, Netanyahu. He was doing something or other that would have cut power from their judiciary branch. And they really only have 2 branches of government over there, the sort of combined legislative executive, and then separate from that is the judiciary. And Netanyahu was trying to do some scheme or other that would have pulled power away from the judiciary. And a lot of people were protesting that. And members of the military were encouraged almost to just not do their job, not show up for work, not show up for training, just sit at home. in order to protest Netanyahu's power grab. So all that is going on with the military. You got to wonder, was the intelligence agencies also taking a nap like that too in order to spite Netanyahu? We don't know that, but it's a strong possibility. And so that is the backdrop for partly anyway for Hamas's attack. Of course, they picked a holiday, and of course they did it once the United States gave Iran some money that then went to Hamas, and of course they did it after the Taliban gave them some weapons that we left behind in Afghanistan too. So how much to blame then is all this anti-Netanyahu? That's another thing too, by the way. You might have heard, what was it, last week I think it was, or early this week, where Donald Trump came out and said, hey, you know, Netanyahu, he didn't help us out with whatever this situation was with assassinating one of Iran's top generals, but that was his only complaint about Netanyahu, just he didn't help that much with assassinating an Iranian general. And the media just jumped on Trump. Oh, he's anti-Netanyahu, right in the middle of all of Hamas's attacks. He's trying to spread hatred. In fact, allegedly leaked emails from the National Guard had one of the generals blaming Trump for anti-Israeli sentiment among the troops. But here's the problem with that idea. The Biden administration was full of anti-Netanyahu sentiment and anti-Israeli sentiment right before the attack. They were the ones who were saying that Netanyahu was being like a dictator. They were the ones who were encouraging the mutiny of the soldiers to protest Netanyahu. So if anyone was most responsible for spreading anti-Israeli hate, it wasn't Trump, it was Joe Biden. So the general there was clearly just trying to deflect from the real issue, which is the Biden administration's policy prior to this, which of course the soldiers in the military being indoctrinated into the thinking of the Biden administration, they made it clear that that's what they were up to. Well, of course they're going to believe this, but there's another factor to this too as well, and that is all this equity and CRT crap that's being taught to the military. You know, under this framework that the Democrats were trying to indoctrinate them into, Israel is an oppressive colonizer and deserves exactly what it's getting from Hamas. That's what they believe. That's why you see all these college students protesting, because they're taught the same stuff that the military is being indoctrinated with. And we know the military is being indoctrinated with it because, well, they started this 2.5 years ago in the wake of January 6th. They said that they were going to start doing this kind of crap. And they had told the whole military to stand down for a couple of days as they did this sort of thing. Gave them lectures and stuff to this effect. So the Biden's policies really were the ones that spread this anti-Israeli sentiment in the military. Now, as for the leaked email that I mentioned from a National Guard general, wherein he tries to blame Trump for 2.5 years of Biden policy, and actually, we're not sure about the veracity of that email either. That's the problem, because it came from Iran, except Iran likely possibly had access to it because a member of the Biden administration had been leaking classified information to them, which could have included how to access this dude's email account, or a backdoor into an email server or something that had this email in it. We have no idea exactly the extent of how much information Iran got out of this Biden administration official. And I guess that's what you get when, again, you prioritize all this diversity, equity, inclusion garbage, which excludes Israel to the extreme. You get crazy Iranian sympathizers who leak classified details to them, including possibly how to access stuff to get emails like the one I just mentioned from the National Guard general that may or may not be real again. But also, speaking of pro-Iranian sentiment in the Biden administration, he's trying to get this guy named Jack Lew in as the ambassador to Israel, which is a slap to the face because Jack Lew helped get Iran lots and lots of money during the Biden year, or during the Obama years, excuse me. So they got basically an Iranian cash bundler that they're trying to appoint as ambassador to Israel at a time when Iran's terror arm Hezbollah is attacking Israel, at a time when the Iranian ambassador is telling Israel you shouldn't fight back at all. So now we're going to trying to appoint a pro-Iranian ambassador to Israel. That's a smack in the face right after you fund the jihadists who are committing all these massacres and atrocities. Just what is the Biden administration's policy on Israel then, I guess? Is it really as schizophrenic as it looks, where you have half the Biden administration hates Israel and wants them wiped off the face of the earth and are pro-Iranian and trying to work with Iran to do this, whereas the other half is pro-Israeli and the two halves don't know what each other is doing? Or is it that Joe Biden's words about support for Israel just ring hollow and we can judge by his actions towards Iran what he really thinks? I guess only time will tell. Or whistleblowers. Where are all the whistleblowers at? There were a lot during Trump. Where are they during Biden? More Silker Joe Show after this break.
AI technology is going to have a profound benefit for all of society, but in particular, it will have a beneficial impact for small businesses. In fact, a new report by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce looked at the impact of technology on small business. And what we found was that one quarter of small businesses are already using AI, with 40% looking to use it in the future. Some of those uses will be marketing and promotions, or helping small businesses communicate with customers and find new customers in the future. We see a 12% jump between businesses that use AI and those that don't in terms of a likelihood of profitability. But when it comes to technology at large, 75% of small businesses say that tech helps them compete with larger companies. It's also important that we get risk-based regulation to help small businesses understand the rules of the road, but help individuals trust this new technology that will benefit us all. If you want to learn more about the work at the U.S. Chamber on Technology, or our new Responsible AI Business Leadership Initiative, please visit us at uschamber.com.
Did you know that 119 billion pounds of food is wasted in the U.S. each year? Meanwhile, 10% of our population lives with food insecurity daily. Brent Fielder, Senior Director of Corporate Social Responsibility for Chick-fil-A, explains how the restaurant company donates its extra food to feed those in need.
Chick-fil-A Shared Table is an initiative that redirects surplus food from Chick-fil-A restaurants across the United States and Canada to local soup kitchens, shelters, food banks, and nonprofits in need. By utilizing Chick-fil-A's extra food to help those in need in local communities, Chick-fil-A Shared Table supports our company's sustainability goal to divert 25 million pounds of food waste from landfills by 2025. To help inspire others to get involved and minimize food waste in their own homes, Chick-fil-A has released its first ever free digital cookbook featuring recipes from our nonprofit partners, which encourages at-home cooks to repurpose extra ingredients in their own kitchens.
To view the Extra Helpings digital cookbook, go to extrahelpings.com.
As the Biden administration mulls banning menthol cigarettes, critics warn it would increase crime and empower cartels. Here's former Arizona law enforcement officer Joby Dickinson.
Our southern border faces serious problems, and a proposed ban on menthol cigarettes would make them worse. Cartels have smuggled illegal drugs like fentanyl for years. Adding menthol cigarettes to their list of products puts more money in their pockets. Stronger cartels make for a weaker America. Oppose the federal menthol ban.
Sponsored by the Border Security Alliance.
The March of Dimes and HCA Healthcare are committed to the best possible start for every baby. I'm Amy Casseri, Vice President of HCA Women and Children's Services, where we have the honor of delivering over 200,000 babies a year. We partner with the March of Dimes on research and fundraising to help build a brighter future for babies everywhere. So march with us on one of the many HCA teams assembled nationwide. Learn more at marchforbabies.org/HCA.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night, and every moment in between, it really is so special. And boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs, and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Thank you for sticking with us through this hour of the program. We are going to a wildly different topic than anything we've been discussing so far for these last 10 minutes, so it was worth it to stick around. We have Mark Morano. He manages CFACTS award-winning ClimateDepot.com news and information service. He is the award-winning producer, writer, and host of CFACTS Climate Hustle feature films, and his most recent book is The Great Reset, Global Elites and the Permanent Lockdown. Mark Morano, happy to have you on the show. How are you today?
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, glad to have you. So with, you know, we've talked before about climate-related issues, green technology, how it's just not ready, but they're pushing it anyway. And, you know, we didn't want to say that they're trying to, well, I was probably happy to say that they are deliberately trying to destroy our energy sector and transportation and food supply and all that. But you're more bold than I am, I guess, in making that claim.
Well, what's happened here, everything's accelerated dramatically since March of 2020 with the executive order for the emergency powers of COVID. That gave the One Tree West the ability to imitate one-party authoritarian rule China. And so what's happened since then is climate activists have literally come out. Their exact words were, if we can shut down the world for a virus, we can do the same thing for climate change. And so what's happened is this is now going on, the intentional collapse of our energy, our food supply, and our transportation. We all know about the energy. I mean, I won't spend time on that, but that's everything from all the crushing, every decision. I think there's been like 145 decisions since Biden was elected to literally shut down U.S. energy. In a word, he's all for drilling and energy extraction, just not in America. And then when it comes to transportation, we're seeing the banning of an entire gas-powered vehicles, not only in the U.S., but globally, without an ounce of democracy. The U.S. Congress didn't vote on this. This was done through executive orders, through unelected bureaucrats, through corporate government collusion, through the U.S. EPA, all bypassing democracy. We're seeing the end of cheap airline flights. We're seeing airline flights being banned in France of less than 2.5 hours. People are forced to take cars and trains in order to save climate change, and the Earth can't handle these flights. We're seeing the BBC come out and say, what would a flying free world look like? And they're saying you won't be able to get fruit and vegetables when you'll only be able to get them when they're in season. And then, of course, you have the food. John Kerry is now targeting American agriculture, going after high yield agriculture and going after meat eating. They're already approved lab grown meat, which Bill Gates has invested billions in, and they're approving insect eating, particularly in Europe now, for human consumption, as they try to restrict our food supply. This is not a conspiracy. It's actually happening. It's happening now. And I give you all mainstream corporate sources. Nothing. This is not relying on secret documents or anonymous sources.
Yeah, none of these things that they're destroying our regular system with are either tested or sustainable. Like you go with the bug eating, for example. There's a lot of bugs in the world, Sure, but it takes a lot of bugs to fuel humans. And we know these bugs each have a role in the natural order. Some of them might even be, keystone species or something, where removing them from the natural world, say because we overconsume them to feed ourselves, actually does more damage than anything that we've been doing so far that was supposed to be a solution for.
Yeah, for every action, there's a reaction. And what's happening here is, what's incredible is this really does then come down to population. And we've had major figures from the United Nations, others say the carrying capacity of the Earth is not the 7 or 8 billion we have now, but only about 1 billion. So by restricting energy, by restricting food, the New Yorker magazine highlighted a group called the Voluntary Human Extinction Movement, which doesn't want to kill people living, theoretically, they claim, but they want to make sure we don't reproduce so that our numbers can dwindle down. And that's really what this is about. It's about making our lives on Earth miserable. They're going to take away plentiful energy. They're going to take away freedom of movement. They're going to take away foods that were, you know, used to be cheap and affordable. We're already having supply chain, inflation, restrictions. We're seeing this globally, by the way, Canada, Australia, Europe, and the Netherlands. They tried to shut down 10,000 family-run farms to meet net zero climate goals. We saw what happened in Sri Lanka, where they went all organic and literally turned their back on modern agriculture, and the country went into a famine, and the presidential palace was overrun. So people are fighting back, but it's just amazing how open these forces are with their plan. And when I say these forces, I'll be specific, the World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization, the United Nations, corporations, and the billionaires who fund them, billionaires like Michael Bloomberg, billionaires like Bill Gates, billionaires like Richard Branson, billionaires like Warren Buffett. I bet you didn't know Warren Buffett funds the whole woke identity transgender toolbox through Bill Gates Foundation. So even people you see as sort of benign capitalists are behind the sort of splitting of America and getting us to argue over cultural issues. Well, the real crime happens behind the scenes.
Well, given how they want to depopulate the planet, I would say that lopping off your reproductive organs and sterilizing yourself would be part of the overall goal of getting us down to 1 billion. So this culture war just seems to be part of their thing, as well as this rise in the acceptance of assisted suicide that they're trying to push as well. In fact, in Canada, they have a problem now where doctors are actually pushing that as the first option instead of the last option, when technically they're not even supposed to bring it up unless you ask.
Yeah, and that's a whole thing happening. Yeah, Ed, absolutely. I remember years ago in the United States, Kevorkian was hugely controversial. Now Kevorkian looks tame by comparison. You know, you go in there for a mild case of depression and they start giving you literature on how you can off yourself in an expedited manner and relieve yourself as a burden to society in Canada. So, you know, this is, and then I can't let it go without saying this. The forever wars. I mean, we had Afghanistan go 20 years. Within 6 months of finally ending Afghanistan, very sloppily, by the way, we start a Ukraine war. And now we're looking at expanded war in the Middle East with Republicans pushing for bombing of Iran. And then there's a congressional report out talking about, U.S. has to be ready for simultaneous war with China and Russia. So this is incredible because the whole global elite love at war because it destroys the supply chain, destroys the economy, makes people dependent upon government, and destroys our energy as well, our energy supply. Everything turns into a wartime rationing, which is really, wartime rationing is another word for the climate agenda. That's really what they've been proposing all these decades.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the folks at the top who are instituting this, none of them are ever going to be affected by it any more than they ever have been affected by anything else they do. They got the money and the power to just shrug it off and put it on the rest of us. But Mark Moreno, that music means we're out of time. And again, listeners, he manages CFACT's award-winning climatedepot.com. You can go check them out. We are done with you for the Silker Joe Show today, but we appreciate you all coming along for the ride. And our website is mainstreamradionetwork.com. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.